On episode 141, I am delighted to be joined by Dublin and Cúnamh's senior hurling goalkeeper, Sean Brennan. On this episode, we discuss his career to date, from not playing any underage intercounty hurling to getting called up to the Dublin senior side, finding balance away from sport in his professional life, staying sharp as a goalkeeper, including hand-eye coordination, mental skills and communication. We also discuss NFL quarterbacks and so much more. I hope you enjoy. Okay, hi Sean, thanks a million for joining me on the podcast.
Hey Orla, how are you? How's things?
Would you mind giving a quick elevator pitch to the listeners who might not know who you are?
Yeah, so hi, I'm Sean Brennan. I'm a goalkeeper for Coola and Dublin Hurlers. So yeah, for my sins.
Very good. I had goalkeepers on before, but I haven't really had many hurling players on, particularly hurling goalkeepers. I was listening to a podcast with Davey Fitz, and the kind of opening line, the host wasn't really a GAA background. They were like, to be a goalkeeper, you have to be like this level of crazy, and then to be a hurling goalkeeper, you have another level. Is that true?
A little bit, like, yeah. No one ever really wants to do it. I don't think anyone grows up saying they want to be a keeper. You just kind of fall into it, like, so. And then you're putting yourself in the way of a 100-odd-kilometre shot straight at you, and you're not allowed to get out of the way, which is the bad thing. Like, but it's a bit of crack.
How did you get lumped and go? Was it just one day and you got stuck forever?
Yeah, basically. So I actually started off playing a goal in soccer. Like, I played a bit of soccer when I was younger, and I was a keeper there. And then I kind of got moved into soccer as a football keeper with Coola. And then I just said, I wasn't very good at hurling outfield, so I said, oh, look, I'm playing in two other sports, might as well give it a go in this sport, and it's worked out fairly okay.
Yeah. You were part of that serious Coola team. I've talked to Clean O'Connor before. I've listened to Shane Kearney. He had a great presentation before and mentioned yourselves in it. Like, when you go back to that back-to-back All-Ireland winning team, when you look at it now, what was that group like in terms of when we talk about high-performance sport? And, you know, I know it's a club and it's amateur, but when you look at it now, like, what levels were you, as a team, were you competing at that time?
Yeah, I suppose a phenomenally, the main thing about that group was just the consistency of it. It's probably a generational talent of players that came along at the right time, kind of similar to the Dublin footballers. But the level of training was always, it was never like 100% and it went down to like 60%. It was kind of like a steady kind of 80, 85%, if that makes any sense. So you were never riding a wave. It was always just a level kind of line through the whole season, and you were always at a really, really high standard. And anytime there's any sniff of a drop off, like, the manager wouldn't really ever need to step in. Like the older, the Paul Shutes, the Ushing Goffs of the world, like, they'd be dragging you by the collar going, "Do you fucking catch the next ball now, or come on?" Like, and so, like, it was just really player led environment. Like, so it was really intense, like, but look, we got the reward for it, like, so.
Because it was funny, I was only chatting to Billy Walsh yesterday, head of USA Boxing, and we were talking about consistency and developing consistency. And you see it with, you mentioned talented teams, but you see talented teams and they're not consistent and they're not a team. So was that, what was, you're saying there it's player led, so I'm interested how it was kind of implemented from the players, you know, from day one. Was it, was there a conversation, was there a meeting, just that consistency level, was that always spoken about, you know, keep the levels up?
Yeah, it probably was, I can't remember if there's one kind of meeting where it was kind of laid out, if you know what I mean, like, but it would always just be an expectation, like, probably spoken and unspoken, and the unspoken one nearly more so. Like, you were like, I mean, I was young enough at that time, so I was probably nearly afraid to let down the older kind of guys, like, you know, that type of feeling. So like Ushing Goff, like, I would have, like, oh, I'd, like, I want to do this for him nearly rather than kind of doing it for myself. Like, so that's the type of people you had in that dressing room. It's just, you had people that you really looked up and really aspired to.
Okay, brilliant. And when you talk about talent, like, what was the secret for Coola to have so many talented players and at one go? Is it the academy structure? Is it a bit of luck with these things? What's the answer?
I think there's probably a combination of everything. Like, I think you probably had some really good, like, hurling men, like John Tracy and Tyke Murphy and Willie Brain and Dale Byrne and stuff like that, and Ken Fitz in the academy, Dennis Monaghan. Like, when I was probably that kind of, whatever, 10, 11 years of age, like, the older lads, they would have been, I don't know, 16, 17 at the time. Like, so we had kind of roughly the same coaches growing up. So obviously they had a huge part in the development of us as hurlers. And then look at, there's a lot of luck that you're just getting 25 lads that are that good at the same time, and they're that willing to kind of go to war for the jersey, and to put in the hard work and put in the effort and make the sacrifices and all that type of stuff.
You didn't have a player charter, did you?
No, I didn't have a player charter at all.
For you, underage, then, when did you start to realise I have a bit of talent here, I have a bit of ability in goal, and when did your Dublin journey start?
Geez, when I got a bit of talent in goal, geez, that's a good question. My Dublin journey probably started at 21. So I made my senior club debut at 17 in the quarter final. So I was first year minor at the time. Our goalkeeper rolled his ankle the Thursday night before the quarter final against Craigcheoron, and I got a call in from the senior manager. And I just thought I was getting brought on just to be on the bench or something like that. I never actually anticipated, but they did a little puck around on the Saturday morning before the game on the Sunday, and there was a few kind of shot stopping drills and whatnot, grand, whatever. And then he came up to me after, goes, "Yeah, you're starting tomorrow, by the way." And I was like, "Oh, Jesus!" So I got a bit of a baptism of fire into senior hurling, but probably that's the best way to go about it. So get thrown into the deep end, either sink or you swim.
And did you not play Dublin underage at all?
I think it was on an under 15, an under 16 development squad, but probably it wouldn't have been kind of a nail on start or anything like that. I think we rotated heavily. I think I can't really remember, to be honest, like, but it wasn't like a starter.
Okay. So you were kind of a late bloomer then on the county side of things?
Definitely on the county side of things, like, was when we brought into the senior panel in 2019 when Matty kind of got the job there. So, yeah, definitely a late bloomer.
Okay. And did you ever, was it kind of disappointing at the time? Was all you wanted to do play for Dublin and it didn't happen for you till you were 21, or did it bother you?
It didn't really bother me that much. I was still like, oh, probably up until minor, I was still playing football and hurling, so I didn't really mind too much. And football as a 16, 17-year-old, football was my favourite. Then once I kind of got brought into the Cooner Senior Hurlers and kind of onto the Dublin 21, then I just parked the football altogether. Yeah, just made the call that, look, obviously, there's people seeing more of me from a hurling point of view than from a football point of view. So I just kind of followed that noise and kind of went with the hurling then.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I was listening to the High Performance podcast, and Ole Gunnar had a brilliant quote. I'm going to ask you about it. I know it's a different sport, but he said, "There's no such thing as a good save, only a bad finish." From a goalkeeper's perspective, what are your thoughts on that quote?
I actually agree with him. Like, if you think of it, like, just within a certain distance, like, goalkeepers should nearly be obsolete. Like, we shouldn't actually save anything. So I actually agree with that sentiment. I always said to the lads in training, so it's like, I might pull off an unbelievable save, but I'm like, oh, you shouldn't even give me the chance to save that. Like if it's 10 yards out uncontested, like, you shouldn't have a hope in hell of it. Like, now obviously I'm not taking anything away from the ability of goalkeepers or what we can do, because look, that is our job to do it. Like, and that's what we're getting credit for at the end of the day, is keeping the ball out of the back of the net. Like, so we'll do everything in our power. But I do agree with the sentiment, and there's probably a fine line to walk with
So you're blaming your full back line, is
it.
it?
Sometimes.
What do you think about when you have someone bearing in on goal, let's say it's uncontested, they're just running at you from say 20 yards out. Do you have time to think in that moment? Do you kind of does it all sort of like kind of black out, or what do you think about in the moment?
You're probably trying to set yourself up to have the best chance of saving it. So depending on the angle they're running in at, if they're coming in on a tight angle, you might just stand a little bit closer to your post, and say, "I want to force this guy across because I know this is a 90% goal. So, like, I have to give myself extra reaction time," or something like that. Like, so you might just do little smaller trick of things like that to try and maybe trick the forward into going to a certain place. If the really, really top forwards, like, they'll kind of sniff that out. Like, so you wouldn't be able to do it as frequently, maybe at inter-county level, than you might at club level or whatever. But yeah, it's hard enough as it is, so you have to give yourself every little advantage that you can.
Yeah, when you have the penalty, and I know it's been moved out to the 21 line, but when that's been lined up, I know you had a great save this year as well in Croke Park, but when it's that, and when it's front on front, man on man, and you're kind of looking down on the penalty taker, what do you do from that moment of trying to get the advantage, because you don't have that time where you can go, let's say they're coming down the right wing in the middle of play, you can't go to the far post, or how do you balance that?
I suppose your advantage of hell is your reaction time. I think if you're Gasly, if someone was standing on the 21, how many times would you save it? I'd like to think it's a fairly high percentage. I think all the really good penalties are scored, but you will save a lot of the, 60, 70% stroke penalties. So like there is, it's probably not that. I'd be interested to actually know what the stats are in penalties, generally speaking, whether they're kind of just more saves and more goals, like, because I think there has been a lot of penalty saves in general, I think, since the 1-1 game.
Since it's been moved back, I think it's really like it's really put a kind of a control on things, because before, like, you look at that clip from that final and it's like, how do you save when you're basically on the 13-meter line? Like,
And you've Anthony Nash after running for 10 yards to hit it at you as well. Like, no one at all was saving those.
yeah, so you definitely don't want that real change back.
Definitely don't want that real change, but absolutely not. But 21 yards, it's a good reaction time. Like, I'd be happy to face shots from 21 yards and trust your ability to get there. Like, there's no guessing or anything. I don't guess at all. Like, I try my best to wait. And it works for me. Like, I thought I had this thing figured out where I could read the hips and the elbows, but the lads debunked that on me there last summer. They weren't letting me away with it, like, so.
Because that's actually, I was going to ask, is there any sort of, I wasn't going to ask you to tell me about the tells or the kind of the body language, but there isn't really a kind of a tell you can have, maybe with certain players. You see, the soccer goalies, and they've the tendencies on their water bottle for in case there's a penalty shootout. There's none of that. You're just relying on the reaction.
I'm just running on reaction now. Like, I do think the striker's elbow will give you a bit of information. Like, because if a right-handed striker is going to his right, his elbow has to be tucked to a certain degree to allow his arm to actually get across his body. But if he's going to his left, then his elbow will be more kind of flared out to open up the arm to go back across. Like, so it's probably too fast to realize in real time, but like, I'm sure your brain picks up a small bit on it. But there definitely is a little small micro cues you could tap into.
Are you a bit of a Cluxton on it and kind of go back and analyze your footwork and everything? Do you find it really hard to kind of go back and analyze yourself and critique it, or are you good at
It's
that?
hard sometimes, like, because it's like when you watch things in slow motion, it's always 10 times worse than it was in real time. Like, but you can kind of go down a slippery slope with that type of stuff. You'll generally know whether you've kind of made a mistake or not, or whether you were in the right place or whether you weren't in the right place. Like, I'd always go back and watch games. Like, I'd watch them 3 or 4 times nearly sometimes. Like, but I wouldn't go too deep and get too kind of caught up in it, because you just drive yourself mad. Like, it's, as I said, it's hard enough. Like, so you need all the help you can get. So you're just kind of looking, you're sometimes just looking for wins to kind of keep your confidence levels up, maybe. Like, if you had a bad run of games and you're conceding 3 or 4 goals or something like that, and you're going, geez, why did that happen? But there's always a bigger picture to it. There's 14 other lads out the field as well that has to get to you first. Like, so there's always a defensive coherence thing to it as well. And there's always questions, did I organize my defense well enough? And if I had have moved someone here quicker, could the shot have been prevented and stuff like that? Like, so there's a lot to it that you'd go back and look over, but I wouldn't get too caught up in the nitpicky stuff of my feet and stuff like that. Like,
Would you ever watch yourself? I know I've heard of athletes before, players watching kind of clips before games of stuff they do really well. Do you ever do that, or to kind of boost the confidence?
sometimes it's not something I have to do or I always do. I actually probably do it more at the start of a season nearly, just to kind of reinforce, oh, you had a really good year last year, let's go build on that this year. So that type of thing, I might do it. Or if you maybe have a real slump in form, I'll just go back and watch kind of a good highlight reel, so to speak, to go, geez, that's actually what you're capable of. Let's get back to that.
How do you manage it when you make a mistake in the middle of a game? Is there kind of, do you have any tendencies that you can get rid of it? I know some people kind of had the, they have a bobbin and they'll kind of flick the bobbin and say, right, that's it, or they'll kind of do their own thing. Do you have any particular tricks or habits?
Yeah, so, I have 4 numbers on my wrist, so like, I'll get a random person before every game to pick them, and then I'll just count back in set sequence of 7. So that kind of brings me back to like the present moment, so to speak. And there's another one as well. I pick out colours in the crowd, and so I look at the opposite stand and I go, oh, there's a pink colour, there's a green colour, whatever like that, just to kind of stop the mind from wandering and get it refocused on a task, and then I kind of like, go, okay, right. I'm refocused now, go back to the game. Like, so all this is happening in like 5, 10 second window. Like, you're not doing it in the middle of the action. If you're doing it when the ball's up the other end or whatever, your free taker has a free or something like that. Like, so
Mm.
help keep the mind quiet, I suppose.
Yeah. What's the numbers thing? Sorry. So you've four numbers and then you count to seven or something, was it?
That's right. Yeah, just so I get a four-digit number, and then I count back in seven from that. So you give me 1,000, and then if I find my mind getting distracted, I go, okay, 993, 985. No, it's the wrong math, 986. Yeah, so back, work back from that. Like, yeah, it just, no, it just stops your mind wandering. So if I'm going, Jesus, I don't want this ball to come in, or I should have done this, or I should have done that, I just go, okay, there's the number, start counting back. It just kind of quiets all that kind of negative talk.
Why seven? That's a really difficult number to kind of go back in.
Yeah, it was. I worked with a guy called Fran O'Reilly before, and it was him that came up with it. So he's the one that gave it to me. It was probably 4 or 5 years ago now at this stage. Like, so, but I've been doing it ever since, and I find it really helpful. So I never really questioned him. I just said, okay, I'll give it a go, and I liked it. So.
Right. Fair enough. That's if it works for you, it works for you. Is that when we're talking about mental versus physical challenge, being a hurling goalkeeper, is it more of a mental or a physical challenge being in goal?
Yeah, it's completely mental. Like the lads would be like, I'd say I'm tired after a game, like, and they'd be laughing at me. You're just standing there, whatever. Like, so, but like, it's just a mental exhaustion, really, because like you're concentrating for 70, 75, 80 minutes sometimes. Like, so it's really taxing on the mind, and obviously not physically taxing at all, really, unless you're getting hit with a spitter and you a sore body the next day. But other than that, like, I'm not clocking up any distances or anything like that. Like, so it wouldn't be.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, and when you find with your communication, you mentioned organizing your defense. Is that again? Do you have your own kind of way of doing it? Your own structure and pattern?
Yeah, I have something. There's a picture I'd like to see in front of me. And obviously, look, hurling is such a kind of a dynamic game that you're never gonna get that picture, but you want to get it as close to that picture as you can. Like,
That's fair enough. When you mention your reactions, is there any sort of non-traditional training drills that you do? You see people with tennis balls or. Whether it's partners thrown to them or thrown against the wall, do you do any of that stuff?
I actually started doing it a good bit. Actually, trialed it out actually in the club championship this year. And a little bit towards the end of the intercounty season last year, just with kind of hand-eye stuff in the dressing room before games. And there's a guy on Instagram called Jay Fulco.
I follow him as well. I know who
It
you're
was
talking about.
yeah, he's actually really good. Like, yeah, so I don't know how I came across him, but I just came across him probably last like March or April or something. I actually kind of like some of that stuff. And there's a few tennis players that are very good for those kind of hand-eye warm-ups and footwork activation warm-ups with a ball and stuff like that I started to follow. And I kind of there's one of the lads that helps with the club team at home, Stephen Butsy. He's helped me out with a bit of the goalkeeping work, and I asked him would he do it with me this year just to see if it works, and I actually kind of really liked it, so I'll probably keep it up. Like,
Did you watch Breakpoint on Netflix, the
I did
tennis?
actually, yeah
Yeah,
yeah
did you find anything in that? I thought it was really interesting seeing like the speed of the ball and kind of in the real time and them talking about it afterwards. Did you enjoy kind of learning from other sports and stuff?
Yeah, I'd watch basically. Yeah, like, I'd be fairly geeky now. If you put any kind of a coaching video in front of me, it could be from freaking. Because actually, I follow a handball goalkeeping page.
Okay, right.
It's some Dutch fella. I can't remember the name of the page off the top of my head, but it's some Dutch fella basically. The handball goalkeepers, like, and just the training they do, like, it's actually really interesting to see how they're doing it, and obviously, like, the flexibility of them, like, they're freaking making saves with their feet up their shoulders, like, it's kind of mental what they're doing, like, so, like, there's always. Like, you'd be foolish not to go pulling from other sports, I think, like, because, like, probably the hurling, especially goalkeeping world, is probably so insulated, like, it's probably a little bit behind, obviously way behind, say, like, soccer and stuff like that in terms of the coaching and the resources available to you, like, so you probably have to look outside of the traditional kind of methods in hurling to try and find ways to get better, and your cognitive improvement and your reaction times and stuff like that, like, it's all something that's not really focused on. So you have to do it yourself away from your collective training.
Okay, right. And do you, when you're going through Instagram or you're going looking at these things, like there's actually it's a hockey goalkeeping coach I was following for a little while. I've since unfollowed him because I'm not a goalkeeper, but it was just interesting to do all these things with tennis balls. Do you find that you can switch off when you're away from the game, or are you constantly looking for tips or looking for new things to try and implement?
Probably. Sometimes, yeah, like I am very good at switching off when I do decide to switch off. Like, but I wouldn't like, if I'm just scrolling through something on Instagram and I find something, I just go, I save and I go back to it the next day or something like that. So I wouldn't necessarily get caught down the rabbit hole of it there and then. Might go, okay, I'll sit down and if I have an hour tomorrow, I might just spend a bit of time watching this or if you're over in Parnell Park early, you might just sit in the car and watch it for 20, 25 minutes or something like that, because you're sitting in traffic anyway, so you might as well get over a bit earlier and do something productive.
When you're looking at, when we're talking about goalkeeping as a kind of the skills that are involved, what are the most important skills away from shot stopping and puck outs? Is there any particular standout ones for you?
Are you talking about like in-game skills, like or
Or whatever you think, if you could probably
yes, no,
separate.
probably like communication. I think is really, really important. I know Herity, Dave Herity was on the podcast there with you guys there last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. He's the one to really kind of change my mindset to it. I started working with him at 20. I actually did a small bit of work from 2017 when I was in with Dublin. Gary Maguire got suspended, and I went in for 3 weeks before I went to Chicago. But that's when I first got introduced to him. But I think I probably started properly in 2019 with him. And he came up to watch one of our friendly games. We were playing Dixborough, and he didn't kind of introduce himself to him or anything like that. Just basically stood behind my goal, and I obviously knew who he was. Like, I was like, why is this lad just standing behind me? He hasn't said a word to me. He's not even engaged or looking at me or anything like that. Like, and then basically we had a call 3 days later, and he just laid it all out. Basically, it was like, it's not good enough at all, basically. And kind of just like said, you need to rip up your whole script and start from scratch. Like, so, and that's what I did. And I think I've greatly improved that. I think it's probably nearly one of my stronger points now is kind of identifying who needs to go when and what needs to kind of change for something to look a bit better in front of me. Like, so.
Was that really hard at the time when he tells you you got to a certain point with it and he was like, well, you have to start again? Like, was that really like, oh God?
Yeah, it probably was a little bit like, but I kind of appreciated it though. Like in hindsight, definitely. Maybe at the time I was like, oh, what's this lad talking about or something like that. That type of way, kind of your ego might step in or something there. But when you actually stood back from it and realized, geez, he's actually right. Like, and so then you'd watch the game from the high behind, and you go talking through the game from the high behind, like to yourself. Like, so I'd watch a game on the screen here from the high behind, and I pretend I was standing in the goal watching it, and I'd talk as if I was in the game. And you learn then, kind of, you just know nearly what to look out for then naturally, because I saw this on the video from up above yesterday, so that's perfect. Like, so that type of thing to get you in tune with it.
Okay, that's really interesting. At the end of a year, I've heard different people talk about it. Johnny Cooper was saying he's always looking for like 15% improvement. When you're going through your own, and obviously this is away from the team, but your own individual goals, is there kind of like a, when you're going into a new season, do you kind of write it out and kind of analyze your own game and see where you're at? And kind of, let's say for 2024, it's what's December 5th, so do you have an idea of what you're looking to improve in the new year?
I'd have a fairly good idea. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go writing it out now. I wouldn't be that keen on kind of like diarying and setting goals and stuff. Like, from that point of view, I wouldn't be a massive fan of, but I know myself where I need improvements. And then you're obviously linking in with your coaches like that to get their views and see where they want you to improve, and then you can go and implement that.
Yeah, you don't want to go down the rabbit hole of kind of overanalyzing yourself in the game and everything.
Yeah, no, and that's it. Like, because like, there's no such thing as perfection, really. Like, you're always striving to this impossible thing, that type of way. Like, so, but the goal is to get as close to it as you can. So, it's always just like, okay, I had a really good 2023. How do I have a better 2024? And I kind of just look at it at a really high level. If there's one glaring, obvious thing that I was really bad at last year, then obviously, yeah, look, let's go and address that. But I probably looked for coaches to say, look, we thought this was could be better. And then that's what I'd probably really go after.
When you're looking at the role of the goalkeeper, how has it evolved since you've kind of hit the senior side in the club over the last couple of years? Has there been this big evolution?
I probably came into it at the start of the evolution, so I probably didn't see the changeover really.
You were kind of with the wave, sort of.
I was kind of with the wave, yeah. I wasn't really playing in that kind of the old school, so to speak. Like, it wasn't really involved in that, so I can't compare because I never did it. But like, obviously, goalkeepers are way more involved now than we ever would have been. Like, you can see that, like, we're getting on the ball a lot more from play and stuff like that, and obviously there's such a big emphasis on the short puck outs now and stuff like that. I know kind of they were coming in the early 2010s and stuff like that. There were probably a big shift towards that, but it's basically 90% of your game now is can you hit a mover 60 yards away type thing. Like, so, and obviously the stuff from play is great, like, because we're more involved, or we're more of a resource to the team, I suppose, and you're not just kind of standing there waiting for someone to take a shot and you're allowed to get out and get active now, so it's good.
Will you do a Rory Beggin on it and go up to the opposite 45 or?
for doing that, I'm in a bit of trouble. Like, yeah, you see, you'll never get away with that in hurling. It's the ball moves so fast. It's
Yeah,
football, you
exactly.
find a chance to get back. But like, if you're out in the 45 and you lose possession, the lads are just going to stick it in the net from 45, 50 yards. Like, so, I think that'd be a curly finger waiting to happen, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't think fly keeper is gonna work in hurling.
No. Like sometimes I do get the odd ones bleed now and I head up the field or something like that, but the last few you get back there.
How do you find the pressure, or maybe it's responsibility? Like chatting to you now, you're fairly laid back. I don't think you overthink it, but being the last line of defence, do you have, does it ever kind of get to you? Do you, what way do you just manage that?
Definitely gets to you. Like, if I make a mistake, it's probably the difference of the team winning and losing a game. Like, so it definitely does get to you. It's funny you say that I don't overthink it because I fucking tear my mind to pieces sometimes over it. Like, but like that's the work you do with the sports psychologists and stuff like that. Like, to you learn not to overthink it, and you learn that look, it's just an unfortunate part of the game that you're gonna make a mistake. Like, it's gonna happen. It's inevitable. It's gonna happen. There's gonna be a day where I'm being asked to hit short pockets, and I'm gonna put it straight into the full forward hand. He's gonna come back and roof it into the net, and it's just gonna be like, well, it's one of those things. Like, so it's an acceptance, I suppose. You're learning to accept it rather than prevent it, if that's the right terminology to use there.
Okay. I sorry, accepted instead of.
I said accept rather than prevent it. That's probably the wrong word to use. Like, but it's like it's like you're obviously not going out to make the mistake. Like, so it rarely is going to happen. So you just have to be willing to say, okay, look, it's going to happen once every, I don't know, 9 games or whatever it's going to be. Like, you're going to make a mistake. So you just, okay, fine. And when it happens, then you just kind of wipe the slate clean and go, okay, have another 9 games or whatever the target is or whatever.
Do you have a good support system away from the team, away from the Dublin setup or the club setup? What do you enjoy doing to get away from sport?
Yeah, so golf would be my kind of getaway from it. Like, if you play a good bit of golf, the day after a game, look, playing the game of golf, I just play the local club competition or whatever. And like, I nearly deliberately put myself in with a random two that I don't really know, so they're not going talking to me about hurling or anything like that. Or so you just kind of completely switch off. You just go have a bit of crack, have a bit of a chit chat walking around the golf course. It's really refreshing for me now.
Are you really good at deflecting hurling questions at this point when you don't want to talk about it?
I've gotten used to it now. All right, yeah. Just the famous Matty Kenny lines. How are you?
And how do you find it, like being it when you're, if you were to talk to a younger player that kind of came up to you and say, look, you're one of my role models, look up to you, and I want to play in goal for Dublin. What advice would you give them, and how do you find being kind of a role model for Dublin hurling?
Yeah, I suppose it's a privilege. Like, we're in a really privileged position. Like, there's only a small amount of people that get to do this, and especially the pool of goalkeepers is even smaller again. Like, so we do appreciate the position we're in and how hard it is to get here, and like we do represent, I suppose, the wider Dublin community and stuff like that. So like, we love seeing the kids come up to us after a game and stuff like that, and we try to spend a bit of time with them because like you're making their day. The parents have spent money bringing them into the ground, so the least you can do is kind of stand there and smile for a photo. Like, the last thing you want to do is get into the dressing room sometimes. Like, but I think it's the right thing to do, and it builds that kind of engagement with the team as well. Like, the more kind of time you give back to kids like that, the more willing they'll want to come and support you and stuff like that. So that it's kind of a knock-on effect.
Do you notice the culture in Dublin hurling shifting at all? Is there improvement on it? Obviously yourselves with Coolabah being the first Dublin club to win an All-Ireland club title was massive. But over the last couple of years, is there a shift in Dublin hurling?
I think there is, like, yeah, I think it's definitely a much more appreciated sport. I think like the numbers are probably starting to reflect that in terms of, it probably was a football dominant club, and now it's probably more hurling dominant club, or maybe sniffing back towards the football a small bit. Like, but there's definitely an influx of kids, and maybe in Coolabah it was just off the back of our success there in 2016, 17, 18. Yeah, kids wanted to be the next guy that was doing that. Like, so I think kids need to. I think it's kind of like that ladies' football talk, like, can't see, can't be type of thing. Like, so the kids nearly need something to look up and to aspire to. And I think it's much easier, obviously, to do that when you're winning things. Like, but yeah, no, it's good.
What do you think it'll take for the next step to win titles and bring it back to Dublin? Obviously, Micheál coming in, he's experienced success before. What's the next step for Dublin hurling?
Yeah, probably just that level of consistency, I'd say. Like, it's just like on a day we can go toe to toe with everyone, but it's like doing it on a really regular basis.
What is the difference between Matty Kenny and Micheál's approach? Is there much similarity, or how does it work?
Like, I suppose at a really high level, it's probably not a massive amount of difference. They're both like really passionate, driven guys, you know, like they do anything for you and they do anything for the team. And like the energy they bring to sessions is infectious. Like, so it's they're really, really good from that point of view. I suppose maybe the small differences are maybe the style of play, I suppose, and kind of how they coach them within their own style of play. But look, that's never going to be the same from two people. So you'd expect differences there.
Yeah, absolutely. If I give you the key to go into any sports setup or watch any coach for a week and just be a fly on the wall or a goalkeeper, who would it be? Who would you like to see?
Oh, I'd love to go back to Prime Patriots and just sit in there for a few days and see what it was all about. Like, I'd love to just go in and literally like sit on Tom Brady's shoulder there for a month or something like that. Like, because like I think he's the epitome of high performance. Like, if you look in and ask anybody, I'm sure it's one of the first names that comes to your mind. Like, so.
Yeah, that'd be a serious thing. Did you watch that series Quarterbacks on Netflix?
I actually didn't. I didn't really get into it. I thought it was a bit too wishy-washy, to be honest.
Okay, right,
Yeah, I didn't
interesting.
really, because like the, like I like NFL. Like, I kind of hope, like, it's because like I kind of wanted to see the real in-depth stuff. Obviously, that's the stuff they can't show you. So it was a nice insight to their family life and stuff like that. Like, but I only really wanted to see like their training and the amount of hours they put in the film room and what it actually looks like. There's actually a really good NFL quarterback guy on Instagram called Gibran, I think his name is. So he does this thing where I think he was an ex-NFL. I don't think he was like ever a regular starter, but he does this thing. It's like, okay, let me coach you up. And then it's like, rotate your phone screen. So like you're looking at the camera behind the quarterback's head and the play running in front of you, and he's explaining to you what to do in next situation. And he's like, okay, here's your options, go pass the ball. Like, and then like he gives you literally a half a second and then it cuts off the screen and goes, did you make the pass? So it's actually like really, it's like mentally engaging. It's kind of funny. Like, we've a little WhatsApp group with the cooler lads that like NFL, and we're all going, did you get that one? And we're like, no. It's like we hadn't even looked at the letter, that never mind that, and the play was over. Like, it's actually, you probably need to see it to understand what I'm talking about with it. Like, but it's definitely worth checking out. Like,
Okay, yeah, that's cool because you're right. It whatever he was didn't give huge amount of insight, but the insight I found was interesting was, their playbooks and kind of the studying and like when they have to know everybody else's run and position for like because obviously they need to know where everyone's going, but like they have to know everything about the play and they're kind of setting up the plays, and then it's like you're doing that on a weekly basis because every team is gonna have different coverages like that. Those adjustments like that. To me, like I have to check out your man, but
manipulation
that
of people is the really interesting thing. How do they manipulate the people in front of them to get off their result? Like, so like if you're standing next to me, how do I lead you slightly to your left so I can bring it back to your right? Like, so there's a lot of transferables to it.
definitely. They have some really crazy names as well. I don't know, did you hear that wouldn't fly in the in a goalkeeping setup or a hurling setup, I don't think.
For the witch.
For the plays, they were like, I forget the but they basically had this really long one.
Audible stuff.
Yeah, it's mad.
Oh yeah, John Gruden saying it's a young quarterback, like, and he hasn't a clue. He just kind of goes like that, and he's just like, I can't take this. That, fairness, like, but
When you look at obviously your career isn't done yet, and I'm always conscious. I like asking this question, but I'm not retiring anyone when I do ask it. But when you do hang up the boots at the end of the day, or and stop playing hurling, what would you like to achieve? What would you like to be sort of remembered for in a hurling setup?
yeah, I guess I suppose someone that probably gave it all for their team, I suppose, is probably what I really want to be remembered for. Like, it's probably what I aspire to do every day. I go out, like, it's like, hey, how can I help my teammates out? Like, just they've helped me out plenty in the past. Like, so it's like I want to be the one to help them out rather than me helping me out. Like, so that means just making the odd save or something like that, or getting a few assists or something from a puck out. Like, that's your job done.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned from sport, Sean? Is there anything kind of prominent that you'd give to sport?
Yeah, like I suppose like the whole kind of attitude and application piece, I think. Like, it's it's kind of giving you a greater appreciation, especially when you bring it into like your professional environment. Like you can get so far ahead of people in a professional setting just by kind of doing a small bit extra. Like, and I think that's the main maybe strength it's given me going into my professional career is just that little bit of this is how you get a step ahead of somebody that's going for the same thing as you. Like, so obviously we're doing it every day in the hurling pitch. Like, I'm fighting off two lads with the club and with the county. Like, and you learn, and okay, this is what they're doing, this is what I need to do, and then it's kind of the same in a business sense to a certain degree. Like,
Was there a point in your career where you kind of realized, some people chat about it, and I think Andy Moran, I was talking to him about it, and he was like, I was asking him about focusing on career and balancing sport with it, and he was like, to get to probably the level that county lads are at, you have to be so engrossed with it for a little while, and then you kind of figure it out a bit later on that I need to put a bit into kind of my professional career. Were you always focused on the professional side of things as well, away from sport?
No, definitely not. Like, it's actually probably the work I did with Fran O'Reilly that time that made me realize that your career probably influences your performances on the pitch. I was in a job at the time that I didn't really like, and my performances on the pitch were poor, and we were able to establish a link between me not being happy at work leading into me not being happy at training and then not performing. Like, so we were able to tie it all back. Like, so it's kind of under his kind of guidance that I found an industry that I wanted to go in and work with, and found an area within that industry is like, oh, I really like this, and I'm loving my job now and I'm playing well at the moment. So I think there is nearly a direct correlation between the two.
Yeah, and I've heard other people speak about it. It's like when you're trying to play at a county level, or you can be at a high level in basketball or whatever sport it is, you're trying to fit work around it, and you're like, oh, I'll just stay in this job because it lets me play, but it's like, I don't like it. And then you're like, I don't like what I'm doing every day. And then it's like, I'm going to just adds this like kind of pressure to sport that it's like, yes, you're not getting paid for it, but it's like, I'm kind of relying on everything for this to go well. It's like just undue pressure that's not really needed.
Yeah, and it makes sense, like, because if you're finishing work at half five or whatever, like, and you're in a mood, like, so you've had a bad day at work, you don't like your manager, that they've been giving you grief all day, your coworkers have been grief, like, you're gonna be in a bad mood, and it's not gonna wash away in the next hour by the time you get ready for training. Like, so you kind of makes sense, like, the happier you can be nearly as a person is probably gonna reflect your performances and how well you can train on the pitch.
Absolutely. When you go to training by yourself, I'm always interested by this. I remember hearing Jack McCaffrey speak about it kind of 2019, 2020, and he was like, all the lads arrive to training an hour early and they kind of do their own thing. And I found that really interesting. It's like, because obviously I'm never play county, never will, but it's like at a club thing, you just kind of rock down, especially for me, I'm playing junior, so we rock down 2 minutes before and it's grand. What do you kind of get down early? What do you do by yourself? Is there pre-training stuff that you do?
Yeah, so there'll be always a bit of pre-training stuff. Probably not this time of year as much now, like, obviously with the light and stuff like that, like, you're a little bit more limited, but I'd say you'd always be on the pitch maybe half an hour early doing puckouts with the backs or something like that, and just on a one-to-one, nothing really formalised, just go out and ping a few balls around to them and get them used to their movements and where they like receiving the ball and kind of what type of stretches you're delivering into them and stuff like that. Like, and then if any of the forwards want to do a bit of shot stopping, make yourself available for that if you can. I know, like, we do a bit of kind of activation work in the gym beforehand as well, so you kind of have to plan around that as well. But yeah, you're generally there doing something. And it's nice getting early, just have a chat with the lads and stuff like that as well. Because, like, with like training is your only time to kind of build that kind of team bond and stuff like that. Like, there's obviously you're very limited in your social aspects outside of the training ground, so like that's your only time to really connect with lads and create an understanding with them.
That I think was highlighted during COVID when you couldn't do that and people weren't allowed in dressing rooms and stuff. It was like the fun bit is gone because that's the bit everyone talks about. And David Hegarty was on about it, like, team bonding. It doesn't really happen on the pitch. It happens after training when you're getting food or when you're all stretching together and someone is the butt of the joke, this particular
Yeah,
week.
exactly.
Like, is that the highlight of it all? It's rather than you're going through the hard training.
I think it nearly is. Like, I mean, no one likes getting slogged around in the middle of November. Like, so you're going to see the lads and to have the crack and have a bit of a laugh at the end of the day as well. Like, it's cause like we are amateurs, like, you do have to enjoy it. Like, if there's no enjoyment in it, I think you're kind of wasting your time, to be honest. Like, because like the amount of hours you're putting in, like, Dublin traffic is a freaking pain, and it's taking us outside lads nearly an hour and a half to get across most days. Like, so you'd want to be enjoying it to make that worth it. Like, but no, it is, the camaraderie is nearly the best part about it. Like,
Yeah. Is that what drives you to come back every year, or what kind of drives you in your career, individually?
I don't know what I'd do with myself if I didn't have it.
You play more
I had
golf,
this
no?
really well. I could do that, I suppose, but I don't try to drive me more nuts, to be honest. No, I just kind of like I'm only on 29 in February, like so. I'd hope I have another kind of 6 or 7 years of this, like. But I just kind of have this really this like this underlying thing within me that I just have to be the best at everything. Like it's just kind of a. It's probably an unhealthy competitiveness sometimes, like that I just need to be the best at everything I do. It's like my girlfriend was like, you know, like any kind of time I go to one of her family events and a board game comes out, they're nearly like, oh no, because I'm just gonna do everything I can to win it. Like can't even let a board game go. Like so I just have this underlying thing everywhere, I just have to compete.
Yeah. Are you a bit like the stories you hear about Michael Jordan, and it's like he's competitive at anything, like anything. He's gone mad for it. A bit like that, no?
Be on his level now, like, but yeah, if you put anything in front of me that has an outcome that's me versus you, it's gonna be me.
We're gonna I'm gonna move on to the sideline seven. It's the same seven questions at the end of every episode. I've sent you these before, so I'm expecting really good answers. No pressure. Question one: what's your favorite quote?
Yeah, so it's a quote from Shaq. Actually, I have to write it down, so I'll butcher it otherwise. Like, it's excellence is not a sorry, excellence is not a singular act. But a habit, you are what you repeatedly do. So that's from Shaq there. So that's something that hit home with me anyway, like especially with preparation and stuff like that as well. So it's really relevant.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying, kind of with my first question of that consistency, like that you said with Kula, just that preparation, like that's just key. That's kind of it's funny, like this whole conversation, it's always gone back to consistency prep. That's obviously a big part of what you're doing, like.
It's definitely part of my values anyway to try and be as consistent as possible. You don't want those yo-yos, like, so you just want to be an even keel as much as possible.
Do you find enjoyment then in the? You're trying to say consistent, like for that 7 out of 10 or whatever it is, but do you find enjoyment in it? Like, I was chatting to Brian Greig, and he's a sprinter, and he was kind of saying how over his career he's kind of had to reshape the way he thinks of it, and like he's like celebrate every PB as if it's your last, because obviously you don't know if there's gonna be another one. Obviously, it's a different sport, but when you're driving for that consistency, do you kind of ever take stock and be like, kind of in giving yourself a bit credit, like.
Yeah, I suppose you would like. I think it's more of an appreciation piece, like an appreciation for the position you're in. Like, because, like you said, like you don't know when it's gonna be your last. Like God forbid, you might fucking be in a car crash or something tomorrow, and you mightn't be able to play and stuff like that, or you might lose a year and you lose your place and you can't get back in or something like that. Like so, like you've no God-given right to be the Dublin number one or whatever. And just because I've started for the last year, it gives me absolutely no right to excuse me to start again this year. Like so. You always have to kind of keep that level up. Like I can't go coasting through the next 3 or 4 months of training and expecting the jersey just because I had it last year. Like it's not the way it works. Like so, you do always just appreciate and look back and go, "Geez, I'm actually lucky to be here and lucky to have this kind of title, so to speak." Like so, you just appreciate it and make sure you don't lose it.
Yeah, very good. Question two: what's the best sporting event you've been to? And you can pick one as a fan and one as a player in a game you've been involved in.
The one as a player is definitely the 2018 replay against the Pearse in Portlaoise, and it's a game I've watched so many times, and even take away the fact that I was involved, I think it's actually one of the best hurling games I think I've ever actually watched. I'd actually it's one of those games that if you said if you could pick one game as a player where you were sitting in the stand, I'd want it to be that game because like it was just a phenomenal game. It was just so tit for tat. I think there was like 1 point in it up until the 61st minute, then we got two in a row then to go three up. Like so, that was just like that was definitely the best. Sporting event as a non-player, I think probably the either I was up at the Open actually for Shane Lowry winning in Port Rush there in 2019. We were sitting in the grandstand, that was pretty cool. Or else was it the 2015 final tip Kilkenny when Bubbles had the Hawkeye free? Was that 2015? That game. Yeah, I think it was 15, might have been 14, but that game was incredible. I was hitting in the queues of going the lads that day and we left going, holy crap, what was that? Like it was just one of those thriller Kilkenny tip games, like so.
Do you find it? I think it was it could have been that in a Pearse game. I was at a kind of a presentation that Shane Kearney was doing, and he made a really interesting point. He was talking about statistics and tackle counts, and he was saying, I think it could have been that replay game where he was saying there was a big cheer obviously when we won, but the bigger cheer was in the dressing room when he called out the tackle count. Was that game?
I can't remember if it was, but I remember that. Yeah, I do. Obviously, the tackles wouldn't have been that important to me. Like, so I didn't really take too much stock to them at the time. But it was definitely a game we got back in. It was definitely important. I just wonder, was it a Leinster final or was it that McPhearshy game? But yeah, the lads were like, we had the cook there on the physio bed, and the lads were like, what was the tackle count? And that was the, we were nearly more happy to hit that. Like, but that's kind of, that's the level we were at. We didn't care about winning the trophy. We cared about hitting the KPIs that the guys put in front of us. Like, and that's ultimately why we won, is because we were able to consistently hit KPIs.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest points from his presentation, and it was a brilliant presentation, but like hearing that, I was like, wow, like that's like a different level. That's when you hear of like teams where it's just focused on the process rather than the win, you know. And that, for me, that was interesting. That when you mentioned the Pirs or Portlaoise, I was like, oh, I think it was Portlaoise. I was trying to remember the full story, but that's pretty cool. Is there any, have you gone to an NFL game? Is that kind of on your bucket list, is it?
Was that a preseason Bears and Broncos games, but I haven't been to an in-season one there, so it
Okay,
is on the
right.
list. It was a bit of a,
Super Bowl is on the bucket list, is it?
it's on the bucket list. Yeah, it's kind of, February's a bad time for to be going off to the States there now for a few days, so I don't know how happy me I'll be with that, but I might have to wait till then.
Very good. Question three, Sean, what's been the biggest setback or challenge so far in your career, and how did you react to it?
Probably no one particular one, but I'd say like making a mistake at a crucial time in the game is obviously like the worst thing that can happen to a goalkeeper. Like, so unfortunately, I have made a few of them, and I'm going to make a few more. Like, so it's just, it's just dealing with that and kind of getting over the disappointment. And it's just the feeling of letting the lads down is the worst. Like, I don't really care about what it makes me feel. It's just like, I'd hate to think that like one of the lads would be like, oh, Brennan cost us that game today or something. And not that they would, like, but that's automatically where your mind goes to, and that's a hard feeling to deal with. And look, you just learn then as you get a little bit older, and as I said, working with sports sites, like you get used to just kind of parking, and you realize how stupid that line thinking is. Like, but that's probably the biggest challenge, is keeping your head kind of in a good place.
On the flip side then, what's been your biggest achievement on or off the pitch?
That's probably winning the back-to-back All-Irelands, I'm sure. Like, and was lucky enough, I got the 2018 Club Player of the Year from AIB that time. So that's a massive personal achievement and one I'm really proud of. Like, so.
Brilliant. Looking back, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self, or maybe 17-year-old self, just drafted in for your first senior game?
Also, yeah, don't spend as much time in coppers. I think enjoyment, like, I think you have to enjoy it. I think now, especially nowadays, like you see people are retiring younger and younger. Like, it's just getting a lot harder to sustain that over a massive amount of years. And I know I wasn't really involved in county setups until I was 23. Obviously, the 21s as well, was not as intensive, but like, maybe in hindsight, it might have been a good thing, because this might prolong my career on this end, so to speak. Like, and maybe it gives me a better appreciation for what I'm doing. If you're there from 18-year-old and you're on the panel for 6 years and a go, like, you've no kind of holidays or no real kind of structure to your life or anything. You can do the things you enjoy, or at least I spent those years. I had a good time in those years, and I was able to fully enjoy it. So maybe now I have a better appreciation for what it takes to be here now, I think.
Yeah, you see a lot of intercounty athletes taking a career break or taking a year off. Like I had Owen Cleary on, and after we recorded, it was a couple of months, we kind of recorded him. I didn't release for a little while, and in between the time he announced that he was stepping away and going traveling for a year. Was the fact that you didn't make it maybe early on, and you had the appreciation that you're not particularly driven to go traveling, you've done a J1, is that, you're 28, probably most people are probably gone to or currently in Australia. Is that ever of interest to you?
Not really. I think I got it out of my system when I was younger. Like, I'd have no urge. Geez, I'd love to go and spend, a month in South America or something like that, but I wouldn't go spend a year in Australia or something.
Okay.
I wouldn't. That wouldn't appeal to me at this stage, no.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Question six, who would be your dream dinner guest and why? And you can open up the table to a few people if you want.
Yeah, probably Roy Keane and Tiger Woods,
Deadly.
and Tom Brady. Tom Brady, yeah. I just, as soon as Roy sat down and said Man United to him, I love watching his Man United rants there now on
Yeah.
Sky Sports. It's like,
Did you
he's
see?
just like, he's a character, like, he's.
Yeah. Did you see the one? Was it last night where he says you can't the left or the spots don't change or something? Did you see that?
Same spots, like, yeah, that's
Yeah,
actually a few
yeah,
people and after that quote, like.
yeah. Yeah, no, he's a character, all right. I'll give
But
you
he's really good.
what, sorry?
Sorry, just like he's really good on the overlap as well. I don't know if you watch that now, like where
No.
he's kind of more personable. Like it's you kind of get to see a little bit more, and he obviously has he's an hour on the podcast where he's just giving stories basically. Like so, he's a
Okay.
good scheme.
Right, very good. Last question before I let you go. If your life was a book, what chapter would this be called?
Yeah, that was a hard one there. Like you really fucking tested me with that. Like
It's actually not my question. I've robbed it from another podcast, so I'm gonna. It's
yeah.
not that smart. I'm not that smart.
I actually went with I think prove yourself. So like I kind of touched on a small bit earlier. It's like yeah, okay. I've had 2 years under the belt now. It's a starting someone hurting goalkeeper. So go prove why you need another 5 more. Do you know, type of way. Like so, I think that's the stage of my career where I'm currently at, where I feel I have a lot more to prove, and I haven't taken any of my previous successes for granted. And I'm sure there's plenty of people out there as well that don't think I'm up to par to be where I am. So I just want to prove all those people wrong, essentially, and back up the decisions that have been made by picking me. So that's kind of where my mindset is at.
Okay, very good. Oh, well, I'm going to wish you the best of luck with 2024 and beyond. Sean, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks a lot for having me on. Really appreciate it.
A big thank you to Sean for joining me on today's podcast. I just want to wish him the best of luck with his club and county seasons and everything off the pitch in 2024 and beyond. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a rating and a review. It really does help the show grow. Something I've been keeping up to date with and following since our episode with Sean is the NFL plays with the quarterbacks. So be sure to leave that Instagram page linked in the description box below. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you in the next one.